Something we experience a lot in our culture is decision fatigue, having so many options and feeling exhausted by it. But picking out what to wear shouldn't be that overwhelming. And that's why I love Quince. Getting dressed is just easier when you have well-made basics you actually want to wear. Quince specializes in high-quality essentials like ultra-soft organic cotton, premium Mongolian cashmere sweaters, and premium stretch denim starting at just $50. They have that elevated feel without the luxury price tag. Lately, I've been reaching for their silk camisoles in different colors because they instantly make an outfit feel more polished. Quince is able to offer prices that are 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They also carry very high quality but affordable home goods as well. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app exclusive offers or go to quince.com/POR. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/POR.
If you're anything like me and you love finding books that completely pull you into another world, I have a recommendation for you. I recently read The Dare by the New York Times bestselling author Harley LaRue, and I totally get why this book has become such a viral sensation. It's the dark romance prequel to the bestselling Losers series and follows a former prom queen and the guy she relentlessly bullied in high school. Years later, they end up at the same Halloween party where one game of drink or dare changes everything. Could not put this book down. The Dare actually made headlines after it was temporarily banned by Amazon for being too sexy before they reinstated. And this new edition is especially fun because it includes a gorgeous gold foil cover and an all-new bonus novella called Ghosted that's never been published before. So if dark romance is your thing, or if you've been looking for the next book talk worthy read, I definitely recommend checking out The Dare by Harley LaRue. You can find it wherever books are sold in print or ebook. I'm Julie Krafcik.
And I'm Yue Xu. This is The Psychology of Relationships.
Marriage doesn't fall apart overnight. It erodes through unresolved conflict, unmet needs, and missed opportunity for repair. Until one day, the distance feels impossible to ignore. So often, we're taught that healthy relationships shouldn't feel this hard, that if the love is real, things should naturally work themselves out. But relationship psychology tells a different story. It's not the absence of conflict that predicts long-term success. It's the ability to repair after disconnection. When repair is missing, even deeply loving relationships can slowly unravel. In this episode, we're joined by Casey and Megan Kasten, marriage coaches and authors of The Marriage Habit and 365 Connecting Questions for Couples, who have created Marriage 365, a relationship education platform helping hundreds of thousands of couples strengthen communication, rebuild trust, and reconnect with intention. But before they started helping other couples, they rebuilt their own relationship after it nearly collapsed, forcing them to confront the patterns, expectations, and myths about marriage they hadn't fully examined before saying, "I do." Drawing from both their personal experience and their work with couples, Casey and Megan break down the psychology of rupture and repair, why conflict isn't the problem, but avoidance, defensiveness, and lack of emotional responsibility often are. They share the green and red flags they overlooked early on, the cultural narratives about marriage that quietly set couples up for disappointment, and the tools they use to rebuild emotional safety and intimacy. This conversation reframes healthy marriage not as something that stays intact on its own, but as something that must be actively maintained, repaired, and reimagined over time. Because lasting relationships aren't defined by never breaking. They're defined by how well we come back together. Remember to subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And if this episode changed how you think about marriage and long-term relationships, we'd love a rating or review. It really helps so much. This is The Psychology of Relationships, and you're listening to an episode that might just change the way you show up for love. Enjoy!
We are very much looking forward to hearing your story. Because as we understand, you have quite the story of how your marriage was headed for divorce due to a lot of these preconceived notions we have about being in relationships. And you were able to turn your marriage around. So I'm ready. I'm ready for this story.
But we're honored to be with you guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Excited to be here. Excited to share our very messy story.
I think this is going to help, like whether you're married, headed for a marriage, you know, even if you're single as fuck, I think this is still really good to like get ahead of things and learn from other people. So we're excited.
We're excited to be here.
Let's go to the good stuff, which is the bad stuff. Let's go back to the dark days of your marriage on the rocks. What was happening when your trajectory was on the decline?
So I guess the best way to start off would be at the bottom.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think there was a moment, year three into marriage, there was so much hatred and resentment towards each other. There was like almost like a confusion and like a, what did I get myself into? I was in love with this person. Dating felt so easy. I've never been an angry person. And in the last 3 years, every conversation turned into a yelling, screaming match where we blamed each other, criticized each other. We put each other down. We tried to intimidate each other by raising our voice and be as loud as possible. And it was like a winner take all because Megan and I are also super competitive. So when it was about time to go to war, like we were going to win no matter what and use any weapon in our arsenal. And there was this moment where I started to mourn the idea that I was going to repeat the exact same habits I saw in my mom. My mom's married 6 times. I am doomed to repeat exactly everything that I saw in my childhood, which was super traumatic and ugly. And I'd never wanted anybody else to go through that.
Yeah, we were asking ourselves the question that no one wants to ever say and ask themselves, which is, did we make the biggest mistake of our lives?
Damn.
And when you're faced with that, and divorce is an option, divorce was a serious option, you know, you're only 3 years into it. It's like, well, we fell in love and it took 2 years to get married and, you know, date and all that. And now, like, how do we destroy something so quickly? And I remember talking to my best friend and just, you know, saying it's all Casey's fault. At that time, I thought it was all his fault and blaming him. And I'm researching divorce lawyers. And she said, this is a really big decision. And I think you should go talk to somebody. And so I'm so glad I went to a therapist. I did go by myself because this guy right here, I begged him to go. He wouldn't go to therapy, which side note, for any listeners, most men will never go to therapy. And I'm saying most, meaning it is the majority.
Yeah.
Like if you look at statistics, it's typically female.
Interesting.
It's only about 20% of men will ever go to therapy.
Individual therapy or any sort of therapy?
Any sort of therapy, especially marriage therapy. Yeah. I mean, I think we're doing a great job in culture of really working and trying hard to make it more normal where there's less shame. So hopefully we'll see a change in that. But from up until this point, that's the pretty standard statistic that's been around for the last 30 years.
That's interesting. That's so different than what we see, like from the people that we interact with. It's definitely, that seems like very, very low. So I'm glad that feels like maybe it's moving in a better direction.
Well, couples therapy, immediately that you have three people in the room, there's triangulation. So as soon as your spouse starts saying, this is what he does, and the therapist validates, whoa. Yes.
Yeah.
It's two against one now.
Yeah. It will always feel two against one. I think a lot of times too, there's a bad stigma where men feel like I'm going to be sitting on this couch being blamed for all these problems in my marriage, which there's a bit of truth to that. If you think about where my mindset was at that time, I did think that it was all him or mostly him. Right. And so all that to say, I sat with this therapist and I complained for 30 minutes and, you know, about how horrible he was. And she said, you know, Megan, she said two profound things that completely changed my life and then luckily changed the trajectory of our marriage. But she said, if you want to make a better marriage, it starts by making a better you. And you can sit here all you want and blame him, and he is accountable for his actions. But I can guarantee you, you haven't been showing up the healthiest version of yourself. And then she asked the second question, and that is, have you done everything and anything to save your marriage so you don't live with regret? And I knew my answer was no. And most people's answers are no. And so for 13 months, I worked with this woman and I did a 180. I started to forgive him. I started to offer apologies. I worked on myself. I started practicing self-care. I started kind of sifting through my childhood and realizing how bad it was. And I had some unprocessed hurt from there. And I was like, no matter what happens in my marriage, at the end of the day, in our relationships, who are we responsible for? Who do we have control over? Ourselves.
Yeah.
That's it. And how we show up, our communication, our boundaries, our response, you know, our intention, our communication, all of that. And so
the story goes that Megan started working on herself And there was a pivotal moment where I was upset with her. I'm walking into the room. I'm fuming. My face is all red. I'm stuttering. You're going to hear from me kind of a thing. Like, just I'm going to attack you. And she saw me and she had worked on herself enough where there was this sense of confidence to know, like, that's your pain right now that's coming out, not my pain. I don't have to engage in it. So she sits there and she's like, I can tell you're very upset right now. And I really want to hear what you have to say. Why don't you go outside, take a walk, calm down, and then come back inside. And then let's have a healthy conversation about it. And I was like, my jaw's on the floor moment of like, who's this? And it was such a powerful moment that, you know, in that time, I realized like, okay, maybe I'm the unhealthy person in this relationship. And then I think my competitive gear kicked in and I was like, oh, I'm going to outdo you. I'm going to be more confident than you. You know, it was like, I wanted to become to her level. So she actually set the standard.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh,
You'll rise up.
Yeah. I want to rise to
that. Yeah. Where in the past I would have engaged with anger, pushed back. Mm-hmm. And that's what I learned was it's so empowering to know that you have full control actually over what you'll allow and not allow in your relationships.
So there's so much that we want to unpack, obviously. But I think the biggest thing, at least where my mind is going, and I think a lot of single people or people in relationships that aren't married yet, is like, how did it even get this way?
Yes.
I think it's my biggest fear. I'll be transparent. And I've seen this happen in other friends' marriages and stuff too, that like one day there's just this switch. And where does that come from? And like when you were dating, like how did that happen?
I think when we go back to dating, all right, so a couple of things as you were talking, Julie, I was like, dating was so much fun. And so that we showed up for all the fun stuff. It was walks along the beach. It was going to the street fair.
Everything was new, right? Yeah, everything's new. You don't know each other.
How long did you two date also before you got
married? We dated for 2 years.
Okay.
But here's the thing. I think the expectation was we were having so much fun. Why don't I pop a ring on it and let's just do this forever? Because this is great.
And it feels really good.
Yeah.
I will say that I know now, looking back, one of the biggest things that we made a mistake on was not going into marriage prepared for what marriage requires.
Sure.
So I believe that most everybody gets married for love. And what I've learned is that is never and will never be enough to sustain a marriage.
Yeah.
Any relationship. There has to be tools. There has to be a plan. There has to be conversations. And so we went into marriage, we didn't have communication skills. So then, of course, as we're talking and there was conflict, well, if you don't have conflict resolution skills, we didn't know what to do. So we just fought.
You knew how to have fun. That's the easy part.
Yes.
And that's what gets you in, is you know how to have fun with each other.
Yeah.
Right.
100%.
So it was all like the top level stuff. It was all the icing.
Yeah.
And we're like, let's do this. Icing stuff forever, but dating and marriage are two different games. That's kind of what we're realizing. And oftentimes, because we're marriage coaches, we're coaching couples that are in crisis. When we go back to where did things go wrong, we can actually go all the way back to their dating years.
Yeah. And then they look back and they go, I wish we did this. I wish I would have been aware of that. Right. This is why we love what you ladies are doing. This is such important work. And for all of you listeners, you're so lucky to have this podcast, because this is exactly what, well, we're so old where there weren't podcasts when we were dating. So
babe,
it wasn't
we're
even
not
smart-
that old.
I mean, there wasn't even iPhone or smartphones yet. There wasn't even digital photography when we got married.
Oh, yeah, true.
I mean, come on. I'm just saying. No social media yet, right?
Yeah.
So
the simple times.
The simple times. Yeah. And so we did, and we knew what we did. And that's all we knew, right? But now, like you ladies, and there's so much information and great books out there, that there's more of awareness. So we really went in blindly to marriage. And that's one of my, I don't say regrets, because now I'm changing it, like where I'm helping people, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we've talked about that as a couple, where the lack of knowledge and tools of thinking that love is enough is so blinding that that switch will feel really big.
That is kind of what we've been able to discover on our podcast too, because our focus was on dating for so long. And we realized that the game of dating, like you were saying, Casey, doesn't apply to marriage. So why don't we focus on relationship-minded dating, which is a totally different way to date. But to get to the point where you're headed towards divorce, where it's such a viable option for you. And I actually have a few friends going through this right now, and they're feeling like, I thought we did everything we could to get this relationship back to where it was. What do you think is the issue with the thought of, I wish this relationship could get back to where it was?
I want to go to tools. So when I think about building a house, a legacy, a home to house all of our dreams, our hopes, our kids, and the dreams that we have for them, when I look at like the biggest thing that hurt us going into marriage was I had no tools. I just thought, well, love is all you need. Love should be enough. And love is the foundation of every relationship. But it's not. Trust is. Mm. Trust teaches us who is safe enough in our lives to love. And trust is very tactical. Love is kind of ethereal. Love is, you know, unicorns and rainbows. But trust is accountability, reliability. Mm-hmm. It's safety.
Consistency.
Consistency. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, if you want to think of it, there's nothing romantic about trust.
Right.
It is a very tactical word in relationships. And so we are asking people to build something and giving them no tools.
Yeah.
And one of the things we have seen over the last decade and a half that we've been working with couples is couples honestly don't need more therapy. They need better tools because with tools, then they can, you know, work it into their relationship. That's kind of like the whole idea of having good habits of affirming each other, of checking in, of finding alignment, that the tools that we've kind of created are really meant to create that foundation of trust.
But to go back to your question of, we want to go back to that. Like, we had something so good and we're like longing for that. I see that. I think that it's good to go back and reminisce about what were the good things when we were dating. For example, we were very playful, very fun, things like that. We were very quick to forgive. We were very quick to apologize when we were dating. We didn't hold grudges, right? So go back and reminisce and say, what were the good that we want to take? But I am so glad that I am not the same person who I was when we were dating.
Yeah.
It's through the hardships and the challenges that have made me such a better person. And it's not a braggy thing. It's to say I was very immature. There was a lot of me that was very insecure. And same with Casey.
We both.
And to see who we are now. Oh, I like who we are now better. And I believe that we should all be people where we are evolving and changing and growing and learning from our mistakes. And so I see that desire to say, let's go back to what we had, but only part of it, right?
Right.
Like only the good, like focus on the good, make those lists. What was it that worked?
Yeah.
I like that.
I want to dive into this even more, but before we do, let's take a quick break to hear from our partners. So this might be controversial, but I'm not a big meal prepper. I really just like getting something fresh on the table. And when both my partner and I are working all day, sometimes we don't have time to go shopping and make an elaborate dish during weekdays, which is why I am so excited to try restaurant quality protein from Omaha Steaks. They have so many meats to choose from too, with different types of filet mignon, including butcher's cut, wagyu, grass-fed, burgers, chicken, and so much more. And the reason they are so good is that Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process. And to make it easy for delivery nationwide, they are flash frozen at their peak to give you that rich, juicy, and intense flavor that they are known for. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com. Promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. If your ideal romance has morally gray characters, impossible love stories, and enough emotional damage to keep you thinking about it for days, you need to read The Throne of Broken Gods by Amber V. Nicole. This is the second book in the Gods and Monsters series, and I feel like it takes everything that I loved about the first one and turns it up another level. At the center of the story are Diana, an ancient shapeshifter who's fully embracing her monstrous side after devastating betrayal, and Sam Keel, the immortal god king who still believes there's something worth saving in her. This book had me on the edge of my seat the entire read. What I love most is that the story never really lets you decide who's the hero and who's the villain, and the lines get blurrier with every chapter. I could not put it down, as I just love the banter throughout the book. And if you're a collector, the deluxe special edition is honestly stunning, with stenciled edges, full color character art and papers, a designed hardcover case, and an exclusive bonus scene. Pick up The Throne of Broken Gods by Amber V. Nicole wherever books are sold.
Staying present in a relationship might be really difficult sometimes because it's not just one date. It's every night on the couch, every meal, every, wait, what did you just say? Moment. That's where Brick comes in. Brick is a simple device that helps you put boundaries around your phone so you can actually be with your partner. You just pair the device to your phone and it locks distracting apps, and suddenly you're not half listening while trying to reply to texts or checking Instagram. Now, it's not about cutting out technology. It's about choosing presence during dinner, before bed, or when you're having a real conversation that deserves your full attention. Because relationships don't fall apart from one big thing. They fade from too many small moments of distraction. If you want to be more present with your partner, check out Brick. Go to getbrick.app/POR show for 10% off. That's getbrick.app/POR show.
So I think, Casey, I know what you were saying about the trust part. It brought something to me because I know when I was dating the last time around really changed what I was looking for. And it was consistency, reliability, the unsexy stuff. And I think a lot of times in the past for me too, I was not looking for that. That was not at the forefront. And that doesn't mean the only qualities you're looking for is that, but I do believe that it's the foundation. And if that's not there, then it's hard to build. You're also saying that, like, you now can see, like, with your clients, like, in retrospect, there were some red flags or things that were apparent at the beginning. Like, do you think that you can tell early on, like, if you'll have challenges down the line, or is this something that is just kind of inevitable?
Studies and research has shown that, yes, conflict is inevitable. So it's going to happen because of this reason. You are two different people, different personalities.
Oh, and we are two very different people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We are
thank goodness, right? Why would you want to marry yourself?
I define a type B and she defines the type A. Like, oh, yeah. Dictionary.
Like, he's a spender, I'm a saver. You're so, like, spontaneous and I'm so structured and a planner, right? I'm an internal processor where I make, like, pros and cons lists. I think about it, I journal. He is a verbal processor, right? He's late to everything. I'm on time to everything. I mean, we could go on and on and on and on. And so here we are. We actually really genuinely like each other and love each other, married 21 years, and we're more different than alike. So conflict is going to happen because you've got two people with different upbringings, personalities, preferences, beliefs, just anything that we just named, you know, how you view money. And so that's going to happen, but it's having the tools and the right mindset and that foundation and safety of trust that when conflict arises, you're actually going to know what to do with it.
Yes.
Because now we still have conflict. We're different people, but our conflict used to last 2-3 weeks. Now it's like 2-3 minutes. Well, I can do that. I mean, that's just going to happen. So yeah, studies show 69% of conflict is inevitable. It's going to happen.
Were you just making up that number because you like it?
I know. It is a great number for marriage and relationships. 69, but it's not my research. It's the Gottman Institute research. But yes, yes.
What are the red flags though in early dating that can determine the outcome of that relationship?
A big one is someone who's not willing to talk about the uncomfortable conversations. Because if they're not willing when they're dating, they're not going to be willing to do it when you're married. And comfortable means something different for everybody. So it could be about money. It could be about family. It could be about a specific memory they have. But if someone shuts down and says often, I don't want to talk about that, that's a really bad sign. Because we know communication is so important in romantic relationships.
All right, and I want to talk about sex.
There's a red flag with sex? Okay.
Yeah, because one of the things we've seen with couples that come to us that have not established a firm foundation of trust, going back to that, Julie, is they introduce sex too early in the relationship.
Yeah.
We have seen this time and time again. It's so much so that it is a pattern. Because what we've discovered through just looking at relationships, that as long as a relationship is non-sexual, that distance right there, that is the time where you are actually in a hardcore evaluation phase. Because as soon as a couple introduces sex, sex is a bonding experience. It releases all sorts of hormones that creates connections. And we have not established, is this person safe enough for us?
So if the sex is good, it'll skew someone's judgment to say, is this the right partner for me?
Which sex with sex a new person is novelty. So of course it's going to be good.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer. So then a question we would tell everybody to ask themselves in a relationship is, if we removed all of the sex and physical intimacy from the relationship, what else do I have?
Is it that people like build too much, like they rely too much on sex?
It's more so that it skews the judgment.
It's like
of
beer goggles of relationships.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Especially for women. I'm going to be gender specific here. Women tend to ignore or minimize the red flags that they see in a guy because the sex is good.
I could see that.
It's bad. It's really bad. And so typically if it's like 3 months or less, that tends to be the like they have problems once they get married.
So what we've heard, though, with those couples is that they stop having the hard conversations. So they stop having hard conversations that just keep it really on the top layer. They haven't really evaluated if this is the right person for me. Then they do this for months, even years. Mm-hmm. Maybe they throw a kid in there at some point and they're like, well, let's start a family. And then we see them 6 years later when everything's falling apart. He's not working on himself. I'm trying to help the relationship out. We have a kid together. So now we feel like we have to be together. But I'm with someone who is a stick in the mud. And now what do I do? And I guess the second part would be, we talk about sexual compatibility. I see a lot of people focusing on some level of performance in the bedroom, but sexual compatibility is about the mindset that we show up to the bedroom. And sex is this beautiful thing where we get to bring pleasure to someone else. So when I think of someone who is sexually compatible, I think of a healthy mindset about sex as a gift to each other versus what can I get out of the bedroom?
Mm-hmm. It's a very like selfish mindset of like, well, they better know how to please me versus saying, why don't we just connect and teach each other and guide each other on how we both like to be pleased?
Mm-hmm. And that was an issue in our own relationship. So takes one to know one.
Yeah.
So I guess speaking of your relationship, we started this off of, you know, at the low point. But before we got on this recording, you were telling us how your daughter looks up to you both as like the epitome of marriage, just how much you love each other. So clearly there's been a 360. How did you get out of that? How did you get there?
Yeah. You know, if it took us 2 years to fall in love and get married, it took us about 3 years to destroy our marriage. We like to tell people this was not an overnight thing. It took about 4 to 5 years to repair it.
Mm.
And really, it was incorporating these tools, being consistent, offering a lot of apologies, but mainly this. If you want to make a better marriage, make a better you. Really focusing on ourselves more than each other, because two healthy people create a healthy relationship.
Mm.
And once we stopped blaming and pointing fingers and waiting around for the other person to change, which that just builds resentment, and then said, well, what can I control? What can I work on? That's when things really changed. And so we started dating again. We started incorporating the good things about our relationship when we were dating, right? And really just being quick to own our stuff and be accountable. And then in that process, we couldn't afford therapy anymore. So then what do you do if someone's like, you need to go to therapy, and you're like, well, I can't afford it, or my spouse won't go, or I don't have a good therapist in my area? I mean, there's legitimate reasons why, or people have had really bad experiences with therapy and they don't want to go. So that's kind of how we actually ended up starting to do Marriage 365, was we started creating resources that young, stupid, naive, hurting Casey and Megan needed.
Yeah.
And our friends saw the turnaround, because all our friends were like, oh, they're doomed for divorce. I mean, they all like, they're shocked.
We had the ghoul pool.
Oh, yeah. It was like, if anyone's going to get divorced, it's going to be Casey and Megan, because between both sets of our parents, there's 12 marriages. So like, my dad's been married a few times too. So like, we just came from divorce and affairs. And then we live in Orange County, which has the highest divorce rate in the nation. It's 72%.
Does it really?
It does. Yes.
Damn. That's why all of my parents' neighbors are like single parents. All of them.
Blended families in Orange County. Lots of second, third, fourth marriages in Orange County. Yes.
Interesting.
And so all that to say, marriage should never be something that someone can't fix and get help for because they can't go to therapy or can't afford therapy.
Yeah.
We wanted to create online resources and be innovators in the relationship and marriage space. And that's what we've done for the last 12 years.
Mm-hmm. So I guess what are like some examples of those tools? Is there something that you feel like was groundbreaking for the two of you that really changed it?
Yes. And it's one of my favorite tools. And it's one of the tools that we constantly hear back from people that it's the game changer. It's called the weekly marriage business meeting.
Mm. We are advocates for scheduling sex. And we always tell people, if you have spontaneous sex, there's no need to schedule it. Mm. But for the 90% of married couples who are not satisfied with either the quality or quantity,
or raising kids,
you want to maybe consider scheduling sex as an option.
Yeah.
And again, if someone's having organic sex and they're happy with it, then there's no need to schedule it. But for those who really are struggling, which is unfortunately the majority of couples, there is one or both partners know they should either be having it more, they feel guilty, then it's something to consider. And you can't knock it till you try it, is what I always say.
I think one thing that could be a middle ground too, but I feel like as time went on, we weren't going on as many like midweek dates. We were just like watching TV and kind of getting sluggish. So like every week we have Wednesday night that is like a date night at home. It doesn't necessarily mean we're going out, but like we're playing a game or doing something that's more engaging. So if you think back to like early dating, usually when you get on a date, it would end in sex. So like if you don't feel like, oh, I need to schedule it like on the calendar, maybe there's other more creative ways that you can like bake it into your flow, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or even like you put it in your calendar to initiate sex if that's something that you want to do or you want to work on.
So the weekly marriage business meeting is one of those tools where if Megan and I had that, I mean, there was a time where if you don't do it, you're just being responsive and reactive to the week as it comes about.
Yeah.
And that can really put everybody on the back feet, put everybody in kind of a defensive slash like tense posture. Whereas this is a habit really born from Stephen Covey's 7 Habits. The first one is be proactive. Well, this is your first step in being proactive for the week to set the right expectation, right? Because a lot of conflict comes from misalignment and missed expectations. And this solves both those things at the same time.
Logistically, what do you actually put in your calendars? Sex?
Okay, so that, yeah, we write nap time, which NAP stands for naughty and playful.
Oh, because we, that's, yes, good. Because, that's good.
Because we have kids, right? Yeah. So if they see our phone, I don't want them being like, wow, sex time. And I remember when our, this is funny. So our daughter, when she was 7 and she was reading, she's like, why are you napping at 8 o'clock at night? I'm like,
yeah, because she does naps.
Yeah, because she read nap time. So come up with a code word between you and your spouse, you know. Okay, so a really fun and simple tool, and this is a great thing to incorporate when you're dating, is something called love lists.
Okay.
And this is one of those things that a lot of the hurt came from, that I felt like I was loving Casey and he didn't feel it. Mm-hmm. And he felt like he was loving me and I didn't feel it. And this is a common one, even with dating couples, right?
Yeah.
And so we say, teach your partner how to love you.
I really like that.
I mean, I think what I hear at the root of this too is making each other a priority still. And I think that's something that can happen in longer term relationships and marriage. I'm not there yet, but hypothetically, it's like, you're like, oh, well, of course I have this person. I'm just going to like prioritize other parts of life. Or, you know, you have kids and other stress that comes in. And what it sounds like from your tools, it's a way to reprioritize each other. How do you see couples maybe falling into this trap of not prioritizing and then getting out of it?
I kind of want to go back to the weekly marriage business meeting, because you're setting up the priorities for the week and being proactive. Mm-hmm. So again, this tool catches a lot of the activity within a marriage: sex, meals, money, self-care, like priorities.
It ensures that you're going to make time. I think what happens is busyness is one of the number one killers of marriage and relationships. We're too busy. And you're right. When we're dating, we're very intentional. We make time for it. And so if you don't put it in your calendar, it's probably not going to happen. And I saw this quote years ago and it really convicted me. Your calendar is a reflection of the things that matter to you.
A lot of napping.
A lot of napping.
Prioritizing naps.
Yeah, it is though. And so we always say, if you have an hour to scroll on TikTok or Instagram, you've got time for your spouse. If you binge sports or, you know, you play video games or whatever, you have time for each other. But it is prioritizing that in your calendar so it happens.
Let's hold that thought, because we have a quick message from our sponsors.
You may or may not have known this, but we actually got our start with our podcast, Dateable. For the last decade, we've been studying modern dating, having thousands of conversations, hearing the patterns, and seeing what actually works or what doesn't. What started as honest conversations turned into something so much bigger. A book, How to Be Dateable, which was published last year with Simon & Schuster, is everything we wish we knew when we were out there dating. The mindset shifts, the patterns, the real talk no one else is saying. So if you're dating or you have a friend, sister, coworker, whoever who is, go grab a copy at howtobedateable.com or wherever books are sold. You can get audiobook, hardcover, or Kindle edition. Because being dateable isn't about changing who you are. It's about finally understanding how you show up.
Two really healthy mindsets that we see in couples that navigate dating well. Mm-hmm. One is a healthy sense of curiosity. I think that comes very natural when we're dating, because we sit across from someone who is really interesting and we're just like, who is this person? Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to know them. That generates energy within ourselves. And we ask these really good, deep penetrating questions where we're like plumbing the depths of someone's hopes and dreams and directions and your vision for your life. And then of course that wanes as we get to know each other and we get comfortable with each other. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think we see marriages get off track and deprioritize each other because they're no longer curious mm-hmm. about each other. And underneath curiosity, what you're saying to someone is, I desire you. Curiosity communicates desire. If you think about the greatest connection we have with each other is to know and to be known. Mm-hmm. And that is that impulse is, I want to know who you are.
I want to know your thoughts, your dreams, your hopes, your goals, your fears, yeah. your concerns, your struggles, and love you and accept you and support you through that. And so we should never stop getting curious with each other, but we should also never stop getting curious with ourselves. Ooh. Wow, why did I show up that way? Wow, when my partner did this or said this, ooh, I didn't really like my response to that. That was a little sharp, or ooh, that kind of hit. Where did that come from? Or why did I shut down in that moment? Or why did I lash out? Like, never stop getting curious about you, whether you're dating or whether you're married. If you have that, you're already a one up on most people.
I'll mm-hmm. say the opposite of curiosity is you're communicating, I'm bored with you.
Like apathy.
Yeah, that's the nonverbal.
Yeah, I'm just kind of checked out.
And I want to just say, if anybody's kind of like, ooh, that kind of hurt. I don't think anybody does that intentionally, especially in long-term relationships. No one's doing that intentionally, but we do need to be aware of when we're not pursuing each other, there is something we're communicating in that. And the second part of that, which I'll go back to tools, is intentionality.
Yep.
I don't think anybody creating something as great and as magnificent, like think about the generational like impact that a healthy relationship creates for your kids, your grandkids, for people around you. You cannot just leave it to chance or rely on hope as a strategy. You have to have a plan. You have to have tools to help create that legacy impact that you want. And it starts when you're dating.
Yeah.
Because imagine like if you're on a date with a guy and he's like, okay, this was so fun. Like, let's talk. And there's no like intentionality of like, well, when are we going to get together? Are you going to text me? Should I text you? And he's like, yeah, we'll like figure it out. First off, that's a turnoff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And you're like, wow, I don't know. Like, he's giving mixed signals. And then let's say he's like, I don't know, you kind of pick and we'll just kind of figure it out. No, like he's like, hey, let's go to this restaurant or let's go mini golfing or whatever. You're both intentional. And that intentionality is what's making the relationship work. So those are the two mindsets. And those are the two habits that we would say, if you can embody that. And we see this again in couples where they've been married 30 years, 40 years, our marriage mentors, they are curious people still. Even though they're in their 70s, they are still getting curious with one another and themselves. And then they are very intentional in their relationship.
Well, and that's the impulse behind our Couples Connecting Questions book, is this idea of creating a tool for couples to get curious with each other, but also be intentional about spending time with one another and creating conversations that really help us relearn each other.
Yeah.
I want to hang out here for just a second, if you can just entertain me around this idea of curiosity. What happens? I can hear one of my friends already asking this. I see all the tools I get. I need to build curiosity and still carry forth this curiosity for my partner. But I've built so much resentment in this relationship already. Part of what some of my friends are going through is like, okay, I'm working through some of my issues in therapy. I don't know if my partner's working on his. I don't know if this is an equal
partnership, yeah,
journey right now. And yes, I want to feel curious. I want to know what your love list is. I want to use all the tools, but the resentment is already so strong. It's hard for them to knock down those walls. What advice or tools would you give to people who already have built that resentment, and what can prevent them from building more resentment?
Well, that was me.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I was working on my marriage by myself. He was not a willing participant. You guys, I had walls of resentment, layers, miles of resentment towards my husband. And he was not apologetic and he was not sorry. The first step to that is seeing your partner through the eyes of compassion. Hurt people hurt people. I was hurting my husband because I was hurting, but I fixed that. If you continue to have resentment, you will continue to hurt him. Now, my husband was hurting me because he was hurt. He was hurting. It's not a justification. It doesn't excuse the hurt, but it is the explanation. And so again, who are you responsible for? And so at some point, everyone should have a timeline once they're married. If you're working on your marriage by yourself, I gave myself 2 years. 2 years I was going to do that all by myself without his participation. I was all in. And I have like a 7-step thing that I walk women through when I coach of what you need to do. And because you need a plan and you need a guide when you're working on your marriage by yourself, you cannot wing that. I was willing to do it for 2 years because what you want to look for is you want to make sure that at some point your spouse does have to participate.
Right.
Right. Now, this is the cool thing when you're dating, though. That would be a red flag, right? Because if you're all in and you're working on yourself and then you've got a bum partner, yeah, the good news is you get to leave whenever you want. Yeah. You're married with kids and a mortgage. Mm. It's not that simple, right? That's why it's really cool when you realize this and listening when you're dating, because it's not too late to say, this isn't the right person for me. They're not making effort.
So Megan, I want to ask you one follow-up. So 2 years, you're holding all this in yourself. I guess maybe it's a question for Casey too, but like, what was that turnaround point? And then like, how did you also deal with that? Because I feel like I can't even fathom it. I can't fathom sitting in that for 2 years.
Well, it ended up not being 2 years. It ended up being 13 months, thankfully. Okay. But I had given myself, they say, like in my 7 steps, I say, give yourself an internal timeline. I walk that process through of how long. Mm. Some people can tolerate that for decades, by the way. That's not me.
Damn.
I'm too strong of a woman. I'm like, that's not me. But there's a lot of women who can handle that. So it was very hard. I want to say that. It's not easy. But once you start doing the different tools and you start focusing on yourself and you start seeing your partner through the eyes of compassion, your heart softens. You have more awareness. You're more whole. You're not responsive. You're living in forgiveness. I remember going up to Casey and I randomly apologized for being controlling in that season. I had never apologized in our marriage until that point. And I said, you know, for years, you've been telling me that I'm controlling. And you know what? You're right. And his jaw,
I was like, what?
Like dropped. And I said, and I am so sorry that I have been so controlling and manipulative towards you, and you don't deserve that. And that softened his heart. That softens my heart. Owning your stuff feels so good. It's hard at first, but it's freeing. And then as I walked through like forgiveness techniques and I started to heal other parts of my life, it's hard in the beginning. But then once you get the momentum and you see the fruit of it and you see you change and not be responsive, it's actually not that bad. But I would be curious what you would say of how you responded, because that was my journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, was seeing Megan model healthy behavior that inspired me to want to change. And it makes me think about probably the worst kind of message, the least sexiest message about relationships is this. Somebody's got to go first. And if you're listening to this, it's probably you. And guess what? That sucks. Because I think stepping into the marriage space, there's a lot of tools for couples that are never used. Because rarely do both people want to help the relationship out at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
One person kind of wakes up from the dead and says, holy crap, like we've got to change course. Mm-hmm. We have to wear this. And they're trying to wake their dead partner. And then what happens is, and this is what we hear, is years go by of, well, if he's not going to do it, then I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And the message of, if you want to make a better marriage, it starts by making a better you, is a message of empowerment.
Yeah.
That you have agency to work on yourself, to better yourself, which, by the way, increases your own sense of happiness, peace, joy. If you start working on resentment and your partner isn't, you're the one experiencing all the benefits of it.
I wasn't triggered anymore because I had worked through all my triggers. And so he was sitting there living there in all his triggers. And I'm like, sucks to be him. I mean, he's responsible for his own triggers. I didn't say that.
No, it's totally true.
But I thought that. And I was like, wow, that was me a year ago. Oh my gosh. Like, this is so much better on this side. And that's why people, you know, we have a pretty large social media following and people always ask, gosh, does it hurt your feelings? Because, you know, people are just mean or jerky or whatever. And I'm like, no, because I know my worth. I know that that's not me. That's them hurting. And then they're just taking out on someone that they think they know, but they don't even know me. You know, you learn quickly. And then like, even with boundaries, I was able to create healthy boundaries, kind of like how he brought up, like, I wasn't going to allow him to yell anymore. And I just didn't yell anymore. And I'm not a yeller of a mom and I'm not a yeller of a wife, because I was like, I am that person now and I'm not going to be that person in the future. So then it feels really good to show up healthy. And I'm not perfect by no means. But when I would make a mistake, when I would make a mistake, I was so quick to apologize versus holding it in and anger and resentment. I'm not going to apologize.
And I'm no longer an angry person either.
Thank God.
The person that walked into marriage and I'm like, who is this person? I've never been angry at anybody. Yeah. And here I am angry all the time. that person's gone.
So is there a point that like it's too far gone though? Or like, can anyone get here? Because I think that's like the part I'm still sitting in. Like I get like having a time frame of like, okay, I'll give it my all for this time. But if someone's just not meeting you at all and they're not giving any effort.
Toleration.
Yeah.
Like how long are you going to tolerate being emotionally abandoned in the relationship?
4A. That's one of the A's. So, okay, well, so to make it simple, this is what we go through as life and marriage coaches. The 4 A's are this. Abandonment, affairs, abuse, and addiction. Now, can we recover from those things? Absolutely, but you have to have two willing people to do that. So if there's an affair, are affairs recoverable? They are actually. Mm-hmm. In fact, 62% of married couples choose to recover more than divorce. So you'd think like most people would just choose divorce, but most actually choose to recover. So we've seen it. It's beautiful. It's hard. But is it for everybody? No. And there's a few factors into that. So that would be one. Addiction. You don't want to be married to an addict. You shouldn't be dating an addict. An addict needs to go get help for themselves. Can they? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we are huge advocates for that. And you can support them and love them, but they need to get help for themselves. Okay. Let's talk about abandonment. So abandonment is what Casey was leaning towards, where it's at some point, which it sounds like your friend's going through, where someone has to finally step up and live out their vows that they promised. They have to show up. Mm. Abandonment is actually, and neglect is a form of child abuse. It should be in marriage.
There's no scars.
There's no scars.
So it's harder to kind of identify. But abandonment is this idea of just, somebody just like quits, but stays in the relationship.
Yeah.
You guys talked about that before. I've heard you guys talk about that. It's really, really hard. It's very confusing for the person too.
It's very lonely.
So is there a point at which, you know, I've worked with several husbands that their wives have complained to them for years to engage, and now they're walking out the door with the kids not to return. And he's like, Casey, what can I do to save my marriage? I'm like, I don't think there's anything you can do. It's done.
Yeah. And
that's,
you know,
hard news.
If you're in a marriage and you're doing all the work, you're teaching your spouse that you'll tolerate them being emotionally lazy. Mm-hmm. And so that's why there's a timeline there. So at some point they have to step up. And then the last one, of course, is abuse, where we have a zero tolerance for any kind of physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse. Yeah. That has to stop, right? So yes, if there's a 4A, whether it's all of them, one of them, that is when often we would say those are definitely grounds for separation or divorce. But of course, meet with someone before you make that decision. Mm-hmm. Meet with a therapist. We have resources. Meet with a coach, because that's obviously a huge decision to make.
Well, I mean, this has been such a great conversation, so insightful. But I think my biggest takeaways with all of this is, you know, a lot of times we think marriage is the end. It's once we find that partner, it'll all be smooth sailing. And I think this has really shown that that is not the case. In using dating and the time building up to getting married, that's the time to build these skills. So every time there is a conflict or something that doesn't go 100% the way you want it to, I think reframing to be like, this is just helping us for the long haul is such a better way. And I think the other big thing I'm taking away with this too is it's so easy to just say like, I'm going to go. And I think there are times that it does make sense, like you pointed out, the 4 A's, like there is a time that you can't just keep living in something, especially if someone isn't willing to take steps. But I do think marriage, I mean, you are taking a vow. And I think what you said, Megan, of just, I would rather know that I gave it my all and put my ego aside and look at this person as a human. It feels like when conflict comes in marriage, it's almost like in early dating, this me versus you. And we even say like in our book and like in this podcast, like, if we can go in with a partner mentality, that's just a much better way to connect. And we need to bring that into marriage. Like, we're signing up to be partners. So it's kind of funny that that falls to the wayside. But I think in the heat of conflict, it can so easily fall away.
I'm just hearing the word trust, trust, trust. I keep hearing that word. And I'm not surprised that it's more important than ever in a relationship, in a marriage, in building a relationship. And yes, one part is trusting your partner, trusting your relationship. But what I'm hearing you say, Megan, is trusting yourself is a lot of this building trust.
Yes.
The way you were talking about how you work through kind of working on yourself in a really beautiful way, I kept picturing you freeing yourself from the relationship and then finding your way back. So it wasn't so much like fighting for the relationship and the outcome of your marriage to work out, but it's finding a direction for yourself that's clear, that's strong. And if you happen to be aligned, the two of you, then you come back together. So I think it's like the trust of yourself, knowing that you are bettering yourself, you are being more clear about what you tolerate and won't tolerate. that you won't be making the wrong decisions in your relationship because you are so trusting of yourself and you feel safe with yourself. So thank you for that, because I think that applies to every part of dating, not just marriages, but for anybody who's even single right now, like, where am I going with this? And there's so many unknowns. Am I making the right decision? Building that trust in yourself is empowering yourself with these skills and tools that are available to us.
And Yue, I just want to say something, because it's a real salient point, is that the etymology of confidence, the root word is fidere, Latin fidere, which is trust. Mm-hmm. So confidence is actually our ability to trust ourselves. But if you don't do the work of working on yourself and working through mm-hmm. triggers, becoming more aware of who am I, how do I show up for life? How can you trust yourself if you don't know yourself? Mm-hmm. And so when I hear all these conferences about confidence, right? Because that's a big word right now. It's actually as simple as that. Mm-hmm. Just getting to know oneself is the pathway to building confidence. And confidence is the new sexy.
It is.
That's beautiful. That's a great note to end on. When we build confidence in ourselves, we will have more agency over the choices we make in our lives and to lead the life that we want, which could lead to the most beautiful relationship and or marriage. Thank you, too. It's so nice to hear the side of the story and hear that you're helping out all these couples out there, helping us navigate this very much uncharted territory right now. For anybody who wants to hear more about you and the resources that you provide, where can they go?
Just head to marriage365.com and you'll see everything we've got.
Great. And we'll link it in our show notes as well.
Thanks, ladies, for having us. This was fun.
Yay. And if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships today so you don't miss an episode. And we'll see you all next week.
Bye.